This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And oh boy, is it beautiful here today. My goodness, we have the most wonderful weather. I don't know. Everybody should live in Florida. Oh, no, please don't. It's crowded enough. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, well, somebody who, she should have a ticket for me by now, because Trudy Truitt has promised to take me to the Explorers Academy ship. Hi, Trudy.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay. Well, my goodness, Trudy, you know, we're now at book six of this wonderful, wonderful series that you're writing and getting paid to write. Oh, yes. And, of course, the new book is called The Dragon's Blood. This is amazing. You are amazing. This is such a wonderful series, and I get into it. When I get these books, I forget everything. I just get right into the book because there's so much fun. Are you there? What happened?
I think we lost you there for a minute.
Yeah, we did. Okay, well, okay. So I'm glad you're back. For a minute there, you're gone, disappearing deep into the sea, perhaps. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on again. I feel like we do this every year, so yeah. It's good to be back and to talk about the sixth book in the series.
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh, wow. My listeners know that I love this series because I feel like a kid again, and a kid who really has a wonderful opportunity to just jump into this book and become part of the gang.
Yeah, I think that's the goal, really, is to write characters that kids want to revisit time and time again. You know, when you're writing a series and when you're reading a series, you want characters that you can relate to, characters that you enjoy, but then characters that have troubles and conflicts and problems. So I want them to feel like they can return to it again and again and not be bored. I want to do something different in every book. And now that we're getting down to the final books of the series, it's really important to wrap everything up and have Cruz and the kids begin to start their journeying their way home now, because they've been to almost every continent on the planet, and so we're now in the final, you know, the final stretches with these last two books.
Oh, I don't tell me that. I start crying. I want this to go on and on.
It's been hard for me, too, because I actually finished the seventh book, just finished writing it. It'll be out this time next year. And I am really missing getting up every day and writing about these characters, because I've been with them for 5 years now. So it's been a great journey for me. And yeah, I'm going through the mourning process right now.
Because you have created characters, really, that, as you say, when a kid picks up a book and you feel, or I'm a kid at heart, and I feel like I know these kids and I want to be part of the group and I want them to like me, and because I understand them, and when and they have problems and everybody has problems, and it's part of this whole process of trying to get kids to relate to other kids that and other emotions that you've done so very, very well with this series.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we talk about the science element, you know, creating great stories around science, and they learn about science and environmental issues, and they go on interesting missions to, you know, like hunting for dinosaur fossils and saving whales. But a lot of times we don't really talk about the emotional issues that kids face and deal with, and how do they deal with each other. And those are the things that also that I wanted to weave into the series as well, because they're away from home, right? They have to learn how to cooperate with each other. They have to deal with, you know, arguments.
Yeah.
And they have to do it, you know, they have to do it on their own. Without really their parents being near them, so they have to have some emotional maturity. They go out on missions together. In some cases, their lives are in each other's hands. So, you know, just kind of making kids think about their relationship to each other, friendships, cooperation, respect, what does it mean to be, you know, a team player? And these are all things that, you know, I try to weave into it so that they make for interesting three-dimensional characters that kids really care about and can relate to, too. They can understand, you know, they're like them. They understand them, even though they're from many different countries around the world.
Well, it's the diversity that makes it interesting. It's a diverse group. Part of our life is having, really learning and being able to deal with diverse groups of people.
Exactly. And that was really important, too, to have a diverse cast of characters. They bring in different cultures. They bring in different customs and traditions. And so, you know, every now and then we throw in, like, Brindis is from Iceland, so we throw in a few Icelandic words, which I've actually found that kids really like. They like to learn about other cultures. So, you know, and as the kids travel around, they learn about different societies, cultures, civilizations. They even learn about the different food that people eat from country to country. And I particularly enjoy food, so that was a great part of my research. Lots of different food. And I like describing that to kids. So, yeah, I really want them to get a global experience. Because most of us don't travel too far from home, especially when we're young. So this is a great opportunity for them to travel the world, not only learn about other cultures, but really get immersed in it.
Well, that's one of the important things for me. I've been a world traveler since I was a kid, and that all happened because I was a farm kid, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and I dreamt always of going places and doing things, and just I've been able to do so much of that, and that's why when we first started with this series, it was the Nebula Secret, right? The Nebula Secret,
right?
I said, oh, when I was a kid, if I would have had these books, it would have thrilled me so much, because I related to the storyline, and of course I loved science even as a kid, but here you can't preach to kids, you can't say to kids, oh, you got to like science, you know, study science, but when you bring it in the way you bring it in, with all these, you know, other side stories that go along with it, it makes it so much fun. And I think that I am positive that you've opened so many kids' eyes to the joys of learning.
Oh, well, I hope so. That's, you know, that's always my goal. I want them to have a good time, because it doesn't make sense to wrap everything up in a pretty bow if it's really boring. And I don't want it to read like a textbook. I don't want to hit them over the head with any message, whether it be, you know, science or, you know, friendships or relationships or anything. I just want to tell a really good story. And I think if you do that, you don't need to hit kids over the head with a message. You don't need to be very preachy about it. They will get the message, and they will appreciate that, because they're learning to think for themselves. They're learning to ask the questions that Cruz asks about things. So this is a great opportunity. In this book, they actually learn about extinction, species extinction. They're learning about a species that may actually not be extinct. But the topic, the discussion is, what does it mean when a species goes extinct? And why should we care? And what difference does it make? And they discover that, you know, like something that's small in the food chain, a very small bug or beetle might not seem like losing it is any big deal. But the truth is that the whole food web may very well depend on that small bug or beetle, that the next predator that doesn't have it will affect him and on up the food chain. So they learn that the balance of nature is critical and why it's important to protect that. And I, you know, again, it's not something you want to hit them over the head with. You know, I don't want a big speeches in the book. It's just something that they gradually come to understand. And if you can do that and weave that in there, kids are kids will think about those topics themselves. They'll start asking those questions, and they'll start seeking the answers. And that's really what I want to achieve.
And you've achieved it. So tell us specifically about Dragon's Blood. Where do they go this time, and what do they? Sure. What are some of the things that they do?
Yeah. So they've been almost around the world. We've hit Iceland. We've been through the Mediterranean. We've been to Africa. Now they're headed to the Far East. So they're going to explore Indonesia and China, and then they're going to move on down to Australia and kind of hit that area too before they head on to Antarctica.
Okay. So let's step back a minute, because you and I know the characters so well. I mean, it's like if I saw them on the street, I'd know them. So explain the main characters here, who they are, because I think this is, you've come out with such a group of kids that other kids will relate to and are just so interesting.
Yeah, well, so the main character is Cruz, and he is from Hawaii, and his best friend Emmett is from Canada, and then the two other main characters are Brindis, who's from Iceland, and Lonnie, who is also from Hawaii. So those are the main characters in the book, and the other explorers are from various countries around the world. So Cruz, Emmett, Lonnie, and Sailor. They are looking for the pieces of Cruz's mother's formula that she left behind for Cruz to find. So she engraved the formula into stone, she split the stone into pieces, she hid the stones around the world. So as they travel, Cruz is looking for the pieces of his mom's formula, and that's kind of his personal mission. So up till this point, Cruz has picked up about 6 pieces of the formula, and he's looking for the 7th. So the 7th will take him to the Terracotta Warrior Museum in Xi'an, China. Now, that's the museum of the first emperor of China. And if you've ever seen pictures of it, or you've been there, it's a giant mausoleum filled with clay, thousands and thousands, up to 8,000 clay soldiers, and they're all standing up. And they were buried standing up because the emperor thought that he would need them in the afterlife. So the dragon's blood refers to the red stone cinnabar. And cinnabar used to be used in makeup and dishware. It was ground into powder to put into paint. And the emperor's time, it was thought that cinnabar would give you immortality. It was called the elixir of life. So if you put your cinnabar in your drink, you would live forever. The only problem with that is cinnabar is the solid form of mercury sulfide. So it is actually quite toxic. And so while the emperor thought that he was prolonging life, he was probably contributing to his own death of his life. So Cruz and his friends learn about, again, this is a little Chinese history that they learn, and they have to go to the museum with all of these thousands of warriors and look for the warrior with the cinnabar stone, because that is where Cruz's mom has hidden the final piece of, or the 7th piece of the formula. So that's a kind of a good example of how we can sort of weave in a little history, a little culture, a little civilization into the adventure that Cruz is on.
And just open kids' eyes to it, because I'm sure many kids, you know, never understood it, never understood this. When you think about it, and you look at those pictures of the 8,000 soldiers, and everyone is different.
Everyone is different, yep. And there are chariots in there and horses. I mean, it's amazing. The mausoleum, I guess, was done over pretty much his lifetime. And the actual mausoleum itself, where the emperor is buried, has never been opened. And part of the reason for that is, well, I think it's respect, but it's also because in some of the ancient writings, they talk about mercury being put in the mausoleum with him. It was considered, again, the immortality. So they're afraid that there may be toxic levels of mercury.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they don't want to. They don't want to open that. But yeah, it's an amazing, an archaeological discovery. And they are still unearthing warriors. They're still finding more and more and more. We don't know exactly how many, but they're guessing there's about 8,000 there.
Wow. Yeah. I don't really care too much about traveling anymore, and I've been, as I said, I've been around the world and to so many of the places, you know, of interest. But that is the one place that I would actually like to go to.
Me too.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, me too. Fascinating. Yeah, amazing.
So, well, the kids get involved in a lot of things here, and it's always an exciting story. I'm on a downer here. I knew the series was going to end, but I didn't want to be reminded.
I know. I'm sorry. It's tough, but it's been, you know, I've just been so really blessed and fortunate to be able to do it in 7 books. That's kind of unusual that a series would be, you know, usually it's 3 to 5. So I'm just tickled to be able to do that. Yeah, that full 7.
Yeah, well, we need 7, definitely. And I mean, really, the story about how you actually got this, you know, asked to do this series in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
Well, so my background is writing both fiction and nonfiction. So, you know, it was a kind of a good fit when when National Geographic came to me, and they had the idea. They said, we know we want to do an academy with kids that travel the world and kind of do the same thing that the real explorers of National Geographic do. And then they put it in my lap, and I thought, what would I want to do as a kid? Where would I want to go? And I kind of took it from there.
And you have all the resources for all of the technical stuff that you need to learn too. So,
I do. I mean, the great thing about it is that as I write, I'm able to either read about some of the things that the National Geographic explorers do, places they go, articles they write, videos they make, and in some cases, I can even call up the explorer and interview them and talk with them. So I get a feel for, you know, what their field is really like. What are their challenges that they face? What's the future like? And sometimes I've even, before the pandemic came along, I would go out on a book tour and take an explorer with me, which is a great opportunity to, you know, press them for all kinds of information. And one of the explorers that I went with on one of my very last tours was, her name is Erica Bergman, and Erica is a submarine pilot. So she travels down to the ocean floor to explore, to map the ocean floor in some cases, because we know, you know, so little about the ocean floor in comparison to, say, the moon. We know the surface of the moon, and we don't even know half of what is down there beneath the ocean. But Erica helped me. So I said, Erica, you know, Cruz and his friends are going to go down in their submersible. How would they speak to the ship up top? What would the lingo be that they would use? So those are the kind of things where, you know, her words and her help actually helped write, you know, a section of the book. So it was a great opportunity for me because I had, you know, I could talk to the explorers, I could read about them, I could interview them, and find ways to put their stories into the series as well. So they've been a great help.
Well, Nat Geo is just the best. I mean, you know, I think I've mentioned it to other Nat Geo people that, of course, you get paid, but it is so much fun. And somebody once said, if you love what you're doing, it's not work. And you guys, all of the Nat Geo people, love what you're doing.
I do. And National Geographic never does things halfway. You know, everybody that is there is committed and devoted and dedicated. And they're just great people to work with. So I can honestly say that this has been a really a joyful journey for me. And yeah, I'm sad to see it end. So I've got to figure out ways to keep it going.
Well, I'm sure you'll come out with something new and exciting, because you have this wonderful combination of understanding science and understanding human beings, and especially kids, and getting into their minds and understanding how to bring that all together. And your books are very rich, and partly I'm sure it's because that you've been able to reach out to the explorers, and you have all this resources from Nat Geo. That's why your books are very rich, and I know that there might be only 7 in this series, but it's going to be read over and over. I mean, many, many kids, first of all, will read it themselves, but it will be a series where people will start again at, you know, with the next age kid and start them on the series. this is a series that's going to go on forever, which will be nice for you. And I think kids in, you know, 2030 and 2050 will still be doing this because they're timeless. Actually, the stories are timeless, and it's always comes down in the end to characters, and you've created the characters I think that kids can relate to. So,
thank you so much.
One of the things, of course, I always say this, and I start always actually in October. I start promoting Nat Geo books for Thanksgiving because I think Thanksgiving is a Nat Geo holiday. It should be a day that when, you know, and hopefully this year people can start, you know, going back to their families and see, you know, families and go and celebrate together. And instead of bringing flowers or wine, which is nice, but everybody's got flowers and wine, bring a Nat Geo book. If they've got kids in the...
That's a good idea.
Thanksgiving is Nat Geo Day to me. It is. It is. It should be to everybody across the country. Bring a Nat Geo book. And bring a bunch of them because there's one for you. There's a book for everybody in the family, really. You know.
Yeah. There's all kinds of wonderful books, and they really do their research. They're usually designed so well. You know.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Beautiful photographs. The design element is engaging, and yeah, I have shelves filled with nationally not books that I even wrote. You know, I mean, like
yeah.
Just beautiful.
And of course, these books, I want to remind people that these books are hardcover, beautiful production value, amazing. These are books that a child will just be thrilled to have in their hands. And it makes them, I think, combination makes them feel grown up, makes them feel respected. As you know, you give them a nice book like this, you're saying, you know, I think you can handle this. I'm not going to give you some little cheap paperback thing. I think you're right. You know, mature enough to handle a really beautiful, and the paper, everything about this, the production value of the Explore Academy books, the photographs,
the covers, sketches. The covers are amazing, too.
It is. You could just line the covers, you know, line them in a row. So again, thank you so much for the wonderful writing. I'm going to have you back at least one more time. I'm going to have you many, many times because you're going to write more books.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. I'd love to do that. Thank you.
Now, is there a website that people should go to?
Sure. You can go to my website, truditruitt.com, which is T-R-U-D-I-T-R-U-E-I-T. And you can also go to exploreracademy.com. There's so many resources there, teacher guides, reader guides. There's games for kids. There's videos from the explorers, and you can learn about some of the truth behind some of the technology that is used in the book. So, and we have excerpts that you can read from the book. So lots of great stuff at exploreracademy.com.
Okay. Well, Trudy, thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy to talk to you again, and I'll have you back soon, okay?
Thank you, Patsy. I'd love to do it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay, I think we have a book. Oh, yeah, let's do a book buzz and then we'll go to commercial.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. September has come to an end, which means that the peak season for mangoes have come to an end for this year. And trust me when I say that our backyard has been loaded with them throughout the season. And due to all the mangoes that we would wake up to and see on the ground in our backyard, I couldn't help but to read the book Under the Mango Tree, written by Valdine Mark and illustrated by Sawyer Cloud. Inspired by the author's Caribbean childhood, Under the Mango Tree introduces readers to V and Sanaa, two best friends who love to spend their days under the mango tree. However, the challenge of separation is faced when V moves away. Valdine Mark wrote this book to focus on the joy of friendship that's found in childhood. Becoming number one in children's Latin America fiction on the Amazon charts, this book is all about the power of friendship. I think you'll soon find me bringing some of my friends to read this book with me under the mango tree in our backyard. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
Hey. This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I am so happy to welcome back V.M. Burns. Hi, Valerie. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Patsy?
Okay, great. Well, you know, last time you were on, we were talking, of course, about The Tourist Guide to Murder, which I love, and it's, one of your best, and I enjoyed it so much. And at the time, I said to you, I'd like to have you back to talk about some of your pet mystery books, because I have so many listeners who have dogs or cats, and they're always interested in books that have dogs or cats in them. So I thought, well, where's Valerie? I need to have her back here. How are you doing?
I certainly love dogs, and so there's usually a dog somewhere in at least one of my books.
Well, you know, of course, the bookshop mystery series is wonderful. I love that because, you know, all you have to do is say bookshop, and I'm like, oh, paradise, show me a, you know. And over the years, at one point, my husband said, why don't you have a bookstore? And I said, well, my dear, he said, my dear, you would want me to sell them, and I can't. I can't let them go. He was referring, at that time, I had 6,342 books, I think. He wanted me, he didn't, my husband was, you know, never, ever said, downsize. He would never say that. And in fact, over the years, as he got to know me, he collaborated. I have to blame him because he did learn that every time he saw we would be traveling, we'd be driving through a little town, and there'd be a sign that say bookstore, and I never even had to say, put your foot on that brake. He would just automatically slow down and pull in. He was well-trained, you know. That, now, talking about dogs being well-trained, when you can train your husband that we could be driving through a little town in Texas, and, you know, there's not too much in the town, you know, a few diners, a few, you know, hardware store, this and that, and then there's always that little bookstore. Now, he would never. I mean, he never even said a word. He just pulled right in there. And then he would look around, how far away is the diner? And he would head for the diner and just leave me alone. Now, isn't that
sounds perfect.
Now, that is training, right?
That is training.
You know, I should have a dog and train a dog, but I've never had I haven't had a dog since I was a little girl. Partly because I travel a lot and I could never, I would have been torn, you know, I can't take you, baby. But you obviously love dogs and I don't know about cats, but tell us about some of your pet mysteries because they have some nice titles.
So I have a dog club series that the perfect thing about that for me is that every book in this series features a different breed of dog. So I'm able to live vicariously through these books and experience a lot of different breeds of dogs without having 5 million dogs in my house. So I limit to two. So I have two poodles, and you'll notice on the Mystery Bookshop series, there's two poodles on the cover, and those were my dogs. So Coco and Cash were my dogs, and my publisher asked if they could use them on the cover, and I thought, perfect. So those two chocolate poodles that are on that series covers, those were my dogs. But in the Dog Club series, there are different dogs on all the covers, and it kind of gives you a clue of what breed is featured in that book.
And, of course, somehow the dog always manages to get into some kind of mischief, and there's always some kind of mystery. So tell us about some of them.
Okay, so the first book in the Dog Club series is called In the Doghouse. And it's really an introduction to the series. And the protagonist, Lily Ecclesby, actually is going through a divorce. And she realizes that maybe that's not such a bad thing. And so she's really altered her life over the years to accommodate a domineering husband. And she decides, this is my time. I'm going to live my life. I'm going to do what I want. And she had wanted a dog. Well, she meets up with her old friend from college, and Dixie. And Dixie is actually very involved in the dog show world. So she's a judge, and she breeds poodles. She has standard poodles. And she introduces Lily to a toy poodle. So that's really the first dog. And then there's a plot hound because Lily's husband dies. He's murdered, and the police think she is an excellent candidate. And the police officer who is investigating, he also works on the canine unit, and he has a plot hound. And I did some research on dogs and learned that plot hounds are very good with police work. They have great noses and are an excellent, easy to work with breed. And so I also have another breed that in the second book in the series, The Puppy Who Knew Too Much.
I love that title. When I saw that one, I got such a kick out of that. That's one. I haven't read all of the pet ones. That's one of the ones I read because I mean, how can you resist that? The Puppy Who Knew Too Much. I thought, that's an adorable title.
I love puppies, and it's hard to resist them. And so there are puppies on the cover of that book, and I thought, I just love these. They're awesome. And Lily has two kids, and her daughter, Stephanie, comes to visit. So Lily starts a new life in Chattanooga, and you may be able to hear one of my dogs barking in the background.
Okay, join in the interview here.
That's the newest addition to my family. That would be Chloe. She is a poodle, and she has trained me that whenever she hears me on the phone, if she starts barking, she knows she's going to get a treat. So I can set her up while I'm, you know, on the phone in a conference or something. So dogs are not the only ones who get trained. They train us.
And so, again, when you're writing, how do you get, you know, you've been writing now for how many years? Quite a few years.
My first book was published in 2017, but it took a long time to get started. So probably 2009. So it's been a while.
And, you know, isn't it so much fun when you get involved with a character? In this series, of course, you have one character, you know, that sort of takes over your life while you're writing.
It is. I enjoy having these characters develop and to see where they go and to see how they develop. And it's often a surprise to me as I'm writing to see the direction that they go, and I'm surprised probably along with the reader as I'm writing, and I'm thinking, well, where did that come from? And I just really love getting into the characters. I think that's my favorite part about writing, is the characters and seeing how they go and how they develop. And even with the dogs that I include in my series, they have their own unique personality. And I think anybody that has a dog or a cat or any kind of pet will acknowledge that each one is different. You may have 5 or 10 of the same breed, but each one has their own unique personality, and it's nice to be able to bring that out in my series as I'm writing.
Well, you do it so well, and this understanding of dogs comes right through all of the books. I want to go back a little bit to the Mystery Shop books, because when I first read one of the first ones, and I just was taken by your character, Samantha Washington. And I thought, she is a perfect example of when an author comes out with a character that the reader not only can relate to, but cares about. I love Samantha Washington.
Oh, thank you. I think Sam is one of my favorites, and it's probably because there's a lot of me in her. Sam dreamed of one day being able to quit her job and open a mystery bookshop, because that's my dream. I want to be surrounded by books and mysteries, and that really was something that resonated with me. But she also dreamed of writing British historic mysteries. And that, too, is something that I dream about, because I love reading British historic mysteries.
Well, and I love the combination. I love the combination of historical mysteries and modern day, you know, stories. And it's done so well. And of course, you have Nana Jo in there. I think you probably have a Nana Jo in your life.
You know, I think if I was Nana Jo is the person I want to be when I grow up. You know, I would love to have that kind of moxie, that kind of just abandoned. She is who she is, and there are no apologies, and she is confident and smart and witty, and she just doesn't care what people think about her. And I love that about her.
Well, again, wonderful characters. And now that series is with Kensington, I know, and Kensington has done beautiful covers for that series.
I love those covers. They have been, each time my editor sends me one, I'm like, oh my God, this is my favorite. And then the next book comes out, I'm like, no, this is my favorite. So I have been so fortunate to have a illustrator, Mary Lasher, I believe is her name. And, you know, she just captures their personalities, the poodles. And I can always figure out which one is Coco and which one is Cash. Those were my dogs, and so I know them, but in the book they're Snickers and Oreo.
Well,
so Coco is Snickers and Cash is Oreo. So when you read the book and you see how sassy Snickers is and how just exuberant Oreo is, that's how my dogs were.
Oh, I think it's so cute. As I said, I love this series. I think it's wonderful. One of the very, very best. And I love any series that has a bookstore in it. I gravitate to it because me too. Always, I think. What's that movie? Funny Face, where Audrey Hepburn is in a bookstore, and I dream of having that bookstore. I always say my house is a bookstore, but I would like to share it. And of course, now I can't even have people over anymore. It's like insane, isn't it? Insane. And I have.
Hopefully, it'll end soon.
It will. I hope so. Because how has that affected you and your promotion? Because it's much more difficult for authors today to go out there and not attend events and not go to book conventions and not do all of that.
It is hard. You know, writing is very solitary. You're at home alone with your laptop and you're writing day after day. And going to conferences, going to conventions, seeing readers, hearing their thoughts on your book or their feedback and their questions. You know, why did Nana Jo do this? Or why didn't it go this way? Or is there something more? You know, sometimes they spark my interest and I'm thinking, oh, well, I should have done this or maybe I'll do that in a new book. And so you miss that. You also miss the collaboration with other authors where we sit on a panel and we talk about books. So that's been challenging. I think that one of the pluses has been a lot of the Zoom meetings, a lot of conferences have figured out a way to try and engage with authors and readers online. Some more successful than others, but it's really been a lifeline to have that connection. And the positive of it is that you get people who you might not otherwise have been able to connect with. So not everybody can afford to go to a conference in, you know, New York or LA or, you know, New Orleans, but you can go online. And you can interact with the author to a certain extent. So that's been helpful.
Well, I think it's, promoting books is always challenging. And I'm glad we are at least lucky that there is Zoom and you can reach out. But it is really nice when you meet the fans in person because one of the things I loved when I... like going to BoucherCon, which of course I didn't go to this year in New Orleans, was just watching how the fans would line up to see an author, and the joy they would have on their face, and of actually finally meeting somebody that, you know, they engage in these books. They want to, you know, they want to be part of them, and it's beautiful to see. So I hope that we have more, you know, of that in the future, because that's something I think that authors also need to really feel that human connection, that their books are making a difference. And I think your books do make a difference, because for a few hours, it depends on how fast people read. It doesn't take me that long, but, you know, I have this ability to read very fast, and I actually sometimes remember entire pages of books I read. But I just think that your books are wonderful, and I'm sure all the book lover, you know, the dog lovers out there should get your books. And do you have any new books coming up in the near future?
I do. I have the seventh book in the Mystery Bookshop series, Killer Words, comes out next month,
in November. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
November.
Well, it comes out in November. Look at that. Well, I guess maybe we'll have you back how about if you come back in November?
I would love that.
Okay, you can come back in November, and we can reach out to more of your fans, and I know that you have lots of them, because V.M. Burns, you are a terrific writer. And tell people your website, where they can find you.
VMBurns.com.
Easy enough. And Valerie, I love your name too. I'll have you back in November. How about that?
I would love to come back. I love talking books, and I love being on Joy on Paper.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, we'll arrange a date. Take care now, and everybody get one of her pet books. They're so cute. The titles, it's hard to decide which one you want, but you can look at the pictures and see, maybe she's got one about the dog that you have right there sitting next to you. So thank you, Valerie. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, she's so sweet. I like her. And the books, I'm looking forward to this new book coming out. Okay. We have a few minutes. Why don't we play a little something for Jim Lamb? We have a nice book promo for him.
50 years ago, Jim Lamb left Vietnam after serving in the Navy, where he fixed radios, played ping pong, and swept floors. Jim wrote about his time in the service in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, the story of how he survived Vietnam and kept his sense of humor. The book is available on Amazon. Just type in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. You can also visit his website at www.jslstories.com.
Okay, well, people, get this book. It's fun. And really, you know, even, you know, a great writer can make sweeping floors interesting. And that's what Jim Lamb is. And also, he's wonderful helping to inform everybody about literary gems that he's doing for Joy on Paper, and teaching us a little bit something that we should know about writing. And I'm so thrilled that you can go to my website, radio-joyonpaper, and there is a page there for Jim Lamb. And it's called Jim Lamb on it's Literary Gems, Lit Gems, and find out a little bit about words such as what is a metaphor? Oh, and there's just lots of things on that site that you will enjoy. So check that out. And of course, I also want to remind you that Devon Miller, who did a book buzz for October, it's already October, I can't believe it. He started in January, and so this was the 10th book buzz. And in that time, he's done all these wonderful book buzzes for books that are perfect for children. And he has become the Sunshine Ambassador for the city of St. Pete. He is a wonderful young man, and I'm very proud that he is part of Joy on Paper. And you can also check out his website, his page on my website, radio-joyonpaper. And that reminds me too, thank you for your letters about intellectual property, all your emails. Following Bill Larson's visit last week, Wow. Yeah, I know. The questions about intellectual property are complex, and I also appreciated that you appreciate it. And those of you who said thank you for reminding everyone that you have to be careful what you say on Facebook or any of the internet things, but be careful what you say and what you write about so you don't get sued. And he advised me that I couldn't say a certain word, even though I wanted to say it. So I listened to the lawyer, and that's Bill Larson of Larson Patent Law. He's my patent attorney. I have 4 patents, and so I know he's really good on patents, but he's excellent. I mean, he's the best on intellectual property. So I appreciate your comments about his appearance last week, that he was right on and spot on with all of the stuff that he said. The most important thing to remember is not to sign anything, never sign a contract, never give anyone permission over the internet, because that's just like signing a contract. They can come back to you and say, oh, well, you said yes on your email. So be very, very careful. And that's why every month I have Bill Larson back here just to remind people of their rights and the things that they have to know not to do. And in law, there's a lot of things that you can't do. And so I really appreciate when Bill comes on the program. NaNoWriMo is coming up in November. All of you should start thinking about getting involved in that. That is a wonderful, wonderful project. You write a book, 50,000 words, in 1 month. I know you can do it because my goddaughter, Kanisha, she urged me to do it, and I had never done it. I did it a few years ago. She had done it a number of times and always finished a book in 1 month, 50,000 words, and you can do it. It's funny, once you set a goal, and that's what a real writer does, a writer sets goals. I was just talking to Carol J. Perry, who's working on a new book, and she sets herself a goal. She says, I'm going to do 1,000 words a day. She does 1,000 words a day. And I guess she follows the example of Mary Higgins Clark, who did the same thing. And it's funny, she met Mary Higgins Clark years ago. And look what's happening to Carol J. Perry today. She is selling, so many books because her books are so great. Both now, especially in October. Witch City Mysteries. If you want a book for Halloween, check out all of Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries. She's got a whole bunch of them, and it's lots and lots of fun. So check those out. And everybody, meanwhile, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. And I'll throw in Rita Moreau. I hope that one day she is going to have a series too. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you for everything, Big Ed. And he saluted me. I saluted him. I should have been a general. I wish I was a general. Oh, boy, I would go. Oh, they need me. They need me at the War College. Hey, everybody at the War College, pay attention. Call me over there. I could give you a heck of a lecture. Bye-bye now, everybody. Have a great weekend.